Welcome back. Sean Lyons, thanks for joining us this morning on Horizons. And last Sunday on Horizons, we had Kerry Remembers, where we focused on those who'd lost their lives during COVID times. Death is on your mind a bit these days, Sean.
Indeed. It's just been one of those months or one of those couple of months when I've lost people that I've known a long time and that I would have considered myself close to. Recently, we had Paddy Prendergast, for example, the Mayo footballer from the 1951 team. Paddy was a great friend of mine, and we often went out and talked about old times and talked about, you know, Castlebar and Ballintubber and so on. Now, Paddy was 95. He had lived a very, very full life and was a very, very interesting man to talk to. But then, just a couple of weeks ago, a man younger than myself up at home died, and he was a great character. He was a historian, he was a writer, he was an activist, a community activist. He was organised the reenactment of the races of Castlebar, Humbert's March from Killala to Castlebar over the years. Steve Dunford was his name. And Steve was just a larger-than-life character. And Steve left us as well in the last couple of weeks, as I said, a few years younger than myself. And a man I shared a flat with many years ago in Dublin. I just got word last week that he too had left us. So it's just been one of those stretches of time that so much seems to have happened.
But we're all going to die, Sean.
We are. That is absolutely true. And I suppose it's healthier if we don't dwell on it too much. But I think it's no harm every now and again to contemplate the passing of time and, you know, what have we done with our lives? Where are we going with our lives? And what happens afterwards? I envy in many ways my parents' generation. My mother, when we used to say the rosary together so long ago, one of the prayers at the end was always to Saint Joseph for the grace of a happy death. And we don't have that anymore. We don't have that concept, I suppose, of a happy death and praying for a happy death. So I suppose the best thing is just to do what we can while we're here. One of my favourite books that I dip into fairly regularly is John O'Donohue's Anam Cara. And even the title of it, Anam Cara, Soul Friend. You know, are you friends with your soul? You know, is your soul in a friendly place? Are you friends with the universe? Is your soul connected to the universe? Is it connected with what's good, what's coming and so on? So it's just been a very pensive time for me. It's been a tragic time for me. And I just like to think that those that I have lost in the last few months, that I will see them again, that they are gone to a better place. And, you know, that the promises we hear and that we read in the Bible are true. And that, you know, there is a place prepared for us and we will get together in a mansion in our Father's house.
And even though people aren't as frequently sitting down to say the rosary, a lot of people pray to have a happy death and an easy exit route out of this world.
That's true. I read recently that St. Bridget is credited with developing the rosary as a type of meditation. And I think, you know, we should consider something like the rosary as a form of meditation, because it's something that, you know, we almost chant the prayers the same way as Buddhists would chant or whomever. So if we do have an intention in mind, one of the modern philosophies or one of the modern trends is the idea of manifestation, the idea of creative visualization, that you consider the future, you picture the future, and that it will happen, that the universe will manifest it. Is that any different than prayer, that something is going to happen?
Deep ponderings, Sean. Thanks for joining us this morning. Liam Lawton's There Are Many Rooms.
There are many rooms in my Father's house. Do not be afraid and have no doubt. I am going there to prepare a place. Come and follow me. Come and you will see. Come and take your rest in God's safe embrace. I am the way, the truth, the life. will never die, will never die, but live again. There are many rooms in my Father's house. Do not be afraid and have no doubt. I am going there to prepare a place. Come and follow me. Take your rest in God's safe embrace. I will not leave you orphans. I will return to you. You will live, and you will live forever. Many rooms in my Father's house. Do not be afraid and have no doubt. I am going there to prepare a place. Come and follow me. Come and you will see. Come and take your rest in God's safe
Tricia Dean, thank you very much for joining me this morning on Horizons.
Delighted to be here, Mary. Thank you so much for having me.
Tricia, first of all, tell people a little bit about who you work with.
So I work for South Kerry Development Partnership, and the project we're working on is a European Innovation Partnership project. So first and foremost, we work with all the farmers in the McGillicuddy Reeks.
What are you trying to do?
Well, it's all trying to improve the sustainability and the economic viability of farming in the Reeks. That's a big objective of ours. But it's looking at sustainable agricultural management practices. And it's looking at what we call high nature value farmland.
People look at the mountains and the hills and they think, you couldn't really make a living out of that. You're kind of watching sheep ramble from area to area. And it doesn't look like a good living could be made from it.
It's really, really challenging because you have to manage it. You know, like the mountain is privately owned. You must respect the landowners. You know, this is their place of work. The sheep are their livelihoods. This is how they make their income, you know. And on the main high point of Carnthool itself, there's actually only 5 landowners. But if you look at the entire McGillicuddy Reeks mountain range, there's about 165 landowners in total. It's very difficult to try and make a livelihood from this land. But at the same point, the land does need to be managed. So it's very important that these habitats where these species live, where these things like the Kerry slug, the freshwater prawn mussel, the salmon, you know, all of our water comes from these areas, the carbon is stored in these upland areas, in these blanket bogs. So it's really important that they are kept and well looked after.
Could that land be bought by the state? Are we talking a huge amount?
You're talking about 10,000 hectares. You'd look at areas that are already in state ownership, like we say the National Park, and they are very challenged and they have significant challenges already in the National Park, even though it's in state ownership. The grazing of the mountain is important because we can see things like bracken or ferns that would be known locally, or fennon. It'd be fennon to the farmers, but it'd be millennia or purple moorgrass. These things need grazing, they need management. Rhododendron now is something as well that people would be very aware of.
Is your work connected just to those 165 farmers and trying to get them to be more conscious and aware of protecting these habitats?
It is and it isn't, Mary. I suppose it's the farmers themselves, because this is a big mindset change for them, you know, because I suppose all the payments have been driven towards food production down through the years, you know, so this is actually a little bit of a change now. It's trying to strike a better balance between agriculture and environment. But it's also the wider public. It's educating the public, like the importance of staying on the one path when you're going and when you're climbing Carnthool and the McGillicuddy Reeks, that you're not walking off the track because there's a little bit of water in it, because then you're just making that track wider. We have seen huge what we call path migration, where paths and tracks are getting wider and wider. So that would be a big thing as well, you know, walk to the centre of the track. You know, bring home your organic waste, even if it's a banana peel. It should not be left in the mountains. You know, people think banana peels and, you know, the tea bags, they're all biodegradable. But they're not meant to be there. This is a very sensitive habitat, very sensitive land that we're on. people now are leaving little memorials on the summit of Carntool, you know, and the place is getting quite littered. People don't know that these lands are protected. It's a designated special area of conservation. So it is so important to try and protect those habitats and species.
Tricia, I think a big thing that is in everybody's mind is the big fire in the national park. What's your stance on fires and burning?
What we're doing with our participants is a controlled burn. Why are you burning and what are you burning for?
Why do farmers burn?
Well, a lot of it goes down to eligibility. They're afraid they'll be ineligible for payments. So in times past, a lot of farmers would have been cut on their farm payments for having, we'll say, things like extensive gorse. Okay? So they would be afraid that their payments would be cut, their farm payments on which they depend on would be cut. Unfortunately, these fires do get out of control. Weather changes, the wind picks up, you know, and they are the challenges that you face in a mountain area. So I think it's all about training. Because we know, like, for example, if you try to burn rhododendron, all you do is make your problem, you exacerbate the problem. You just end up with more rhododendron. And with gorse, a lot of the time what happens, you can try burning gorse, but what you'll end up with then is it'll actually help the gorse germinate, so it can actually exacerbate the problem too, you know.
There is a danger that also from tourists, whoever, or people lighting bonfires, that's a huge danger also.
Yeah, that is a challenge because we know that that has happened in other areas in the country in the past, you know, where there would have been old barbecues and things like that and campfires. It's just an awareness.
What's your key message for the 165 farmers and their families, first of all?
I suppose the things are changing and we're there to help them and to assist them if they have concerns. We'll pick up the phone anytime. You know, we're always available. We'll go out, we'll meet them, we'll walk the land with them.
And then secondly, what's your key message for the other members of the public that are interacting in some way with the Macilligut Reeks?
I suppose to really acknowledge the landowners when they meet them. We try to facilitate people bring dogs as long as they kept dogs in the lead, but unfortunately people just wouldn't listen, you know. So please respect the land that you're on. It is fragile. It is a designated land. There's only one access point where we permit dogs, and that's on Strachan. So that would be just in the gap of Dunlow side, just on Strachan Mountain itself, as long as you keep your dog on a lead. But the dog must be kept on a lead at all times because there's still livestock there. But on the other three main access points, there's a strict no dogs policy.
Thank you, Tricia Dean, for talking to me this morning on Horizons.
Thanks for having me, Mary. Thank you so much.
After the break, Father Francis on the Cross of Hope.